All right, so today we're going to take a deep dive into an inspector calls.
Okay.
And I think when we look at this play, there are so many different ways to interpret it and so many characters to think about. But one of the most kind of puzzling
Yeah.
and intriguing characters that always comes to mind is Inspector Gubling.
Definitely
Right. I mean,
Epstein.
he is really the one who kind of drives the whole play forward.
He is the catalyst for everything that happens.
Yeah, and throws everyone into this kind of whirlwind of, accusations and realizations
Yeah.
and all that stuff. So I think it's helpful to sort of start with him to unpack the
Right.
rest of the play.
Absolutely.
So let's just start with, those first impressions. What is it that Priestley does with this character right from the beginning? When you think about that first description that we get of him.
Yeah, well, he's described as, kind of an ordinary looking man,
Yep.
not somebody that you would immediately think has a lot of authority.
Yeah, just a plain darkish suit, right?
Exactly, a plain darkish suit. Nothing flashy, nothing particularly noticeable or kind of imposing about him.
Yeah, and not physically imposing either, right?
Not at all,
He's
yeah.
not like this big hulking
Well,
figure.
but then Priestley uses this really interesting phrase. I think it's an impression of massiveness,
Yes.
solidity, and
Oh,
purposefulness.
yeah. It's almost like a contradiction, right?
It is. It's like, how can this ordinary man
Yeah.
who looks very normal, very average project, this sense of massiveness and authority?
Yeah. What's Priestley doing there? Do you think he's trying to like trick us or is he?
I think it's deliberate.
Yeah.
Makes us question, is there more to this man than meets the eye?
Yeah. And it's interesting too because, with a name like Ghoul,
Right.
I mean, come on. It's like so close to Ghoul.
It's too
It's too
close.
close to be a
It
coincidence.
can't be.
Right.
It feels very deliberate, like a little clue from Priestley.
Yeah, almost like a little wink, wink, nudge, nudge to the audience. Like, hey,
Exactly.
pay attention to this guy.
There's something not quite right.
Yeah, there's something else going on.
Yeah.
And then there's that really interesting moment when Mr. Burling, offers him a drink.
Right.
He's like, no thanks.
He refuses.
Refuses.
Yeah. Which again is not what you'd expect
Yep.
from somebody in that position, particularly in that time period.
Especially in that social setting
Absolutely.
where you're supposed to be, polite
Yeah.
and
You accept the hospitality.
convivial and all that. But he's like, nope, I'm here for a reason.
He's got a purpose. He's not there to
I'm not
socialize.
here to party.
Exactly.
So what do you think that says about him?
I think it emphasizes that he's an outsider.
Okay.
He's not part of their world.
Yeah.
He's not going to play by their rules.
Okay.
And remember, alcohol is a big part of the Burlings' world.
Right. It's all those dinner parties and
The
celebrations.
celebrations and the kind of careless enjoyment that they have, and he's not participating in that.
It's almost like he's setting himself apart from their kind of immoral behavior.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point.
Yeah.
He's not going to be tainted by that.
So he's already like a moral authority in
Yeah,
some way.
definitely.
Yeah.
He's coming in with this very clear sense of right and wrong.
Yeah. And he's not afraid to show it.
Exactly.
And it's interesting too how Priestley, I think, really uses him as a mouthpiece
Oh, absolutely.
for his own socialist beliefs.
He's very much Priestley's voice in the play,
Yeah.
challenging those capitalist values that the Burlings represent.
Yeah. And you see that so clearly in the way that he talks about Eva Smith.
Yes.
Right? He always uses her name.
Always.
He recognizes her
He
humanity.
sees her as an individual,
Yeah.
whereas the Burlings just dismiss her as a girl or a worker
Yeah.
or a problem to be dealt with.
It's like she's just a cog in their machine.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he's the one who's saying, no, she's a human being.
She's a person with feelings and a story.
With a life and a story
Yeah.
and dreams and hopes and all that. So it's like he's already setting up this huge,
This huge contrast
yeah,
between those two worldviews.
between the haves and the have-nots and the
Exactly.
way that those two groups see the
And the
world.
consequences of their
Yeah,
actions.
okay, so we've got this mysterious figure.
Right.
He's got this kind of moral authority. He's challenging the Burlings' worldview.
Right.
But the thing that I always find really
Yes.
kind of perplexing is how does he know so much?
Right.
Like he comes in and he's got all the
So he
details,
knows
even the
everything.
things that they're trying to hide.
It's like he's one step ahead of them the whole time.
Yeah. Is he like psychic or something?
Well, that's one of the big questions the play asks us to consider.
Okay.
Is he omniscient?
Yeah.
Does he have some kind of supernatural power?
Or is Priestley just like messing with us?
Or is it a dramatic device,
Yeah.
a way of making a point?
What do you mean by a dramatic device?
Well, think about it. By giving the inspector this uncanny knowledge, Priestley heightens the tension. He
Yeah.
keeps the audience guessing,
Mm-hmm.
but it also allows him to explore those ideas of guilt and responsibility in a really powerful way.
Okay, so it's not just about, like, who doing it.
No.
It's about something bigger.
It's about the consequences of our actions.
Yeah.
And the idea that maybe we're all connected in ways that we don't fully understand.
Mm, I see what you say. So it's almost like the inspector's omniscience.
Yes.
Is a way for Priestley to kind of shine a light on those hidden connections.
Exactly.
Between people and...
And to make us question our own roles in those connections.
Okay, so the inspector is this mysterious, mm-hmm. almost supernatural figure.
Right.
He's got a message to deliver. He's confronting the Burlings. But how does he actually go about doing that?
Okay, well, let's talk about that when we come back.
Sure.
After the break.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that makes the inspector so effective
yeah.
is the way he uses language.
Okay.
You know, he doesn't just accuse the Burlings outright.
Yeah.
He kind of chips away at their defenses.
Yeah, like a sculptor almost.
Exactly. And he uses these incredibly powerful images
yeah.
and metaphors that really stick with you.
Like what, for example?
Well, one that always gives me chills is when he describes Eva Smith's death.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't just say she died. He
right.
says she was burnt inside out.
Oh, it's such a visceral image.
It is, isn't it? It's not just a physical description.
Yeah.
It speaks to the deep emotional and spiritual pain that
right.
she endured because of the Burlings' actions.
Yeah, and it forces them to confront the reality.
Not exactly. It's not just an abstract idea anymore. It's real.
It's real. It's tangible. It's horrific.
Yeah. And he does that a lot throughout the play.
He does.
You know, he uses these very specific details and
yeah.
these shocking images to kind of shake them out of their complacency.
And to make the audience feel it, too.
Right. Because it's not just happening on stage. It's like
right.
he's bringing it into our living rooms.
It's a call to action.
It's saying this is happening in the real world, too.
So it's not just about entertainment.
Yeah.
It's about making us think.
It's about making us feel.
Yeah. And to question our own roles in these systems.
Absolutely.
Okay. So the language is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
The images are disturbing. But what about the inspector's message itself?
Okay. Well, I think at its core,
yeah.
the inspector's message is about social responsibility.
Okay. And what does that actually mean?
Well, it means recognizing that we're all connected.
Okay.
That our actions have consequences not just for ourselves, but for others as well.
It's like that ripple effect.
Exactly. Yeah. One small action can set off a chain of events
right.
that we might not even be aware of.
And we see that so clearly in the play.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, with Eva Smith.
Each of the Burlings makes a choice
yeah.
that seems relatively insignificant at the time,
right.
but ultimately contributes to her downfall.
Yeah, like Sheila getting her fired from the shop.
Exactly.
Or Gerald having an affair with her.
Or Mrs. Burling refusing her help.
Right.
All of these things build on each other.
Yeah.
And ultimately lead to her tragic end.
So it's like this collective responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the inspector's there to make them see that.
To make them face the consequences.
And to make us think about our own responsibility.
Okay, so we've got this idea of social responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
This interconnectedness between people. But I'm still curious about the Burlings themselves.
Okay.
I mean, are they just individuals or are they meant to represent something bigger?
That's a great question. And I think Priestley was very deliberate
okay.
in the way he created these characters.
So you're saying they're not just like random people?
No, I think they're meant to represent different types of people.
Okay.
Different attitudes, different values.
Like Mr. Burling, for instance.
Exactly. Mr. Burling is the epitome of the capitalist businessman.
Right. All about profit and self-interest.
Exactly. He's concerned with his own success.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really care about the consequences.
Or the impact on others.
Yeah. And then you have Mrs. Burling.
Who's all about social status.
Yes. She's obsessed with appearances.
Right.
With maintaining her position in society.
And she's completely blind to the suffering
yes.
of those who are less fortunate.
She doesn't see them.
Yeah. Like they don't even exist.
Exactly. And then you have Sheila and Eric.
Who are kind of caught in the middle.
Yes, they're the younger generation.
Right.
And they're more open to the inspector's message.
They seem to be the only ones who actually feel any remorse.
They do. Yeah. They're struggling with the hypocrisy of you know, their parents' generation.
So they represent the potential for change.
I think so. They represent hope.
Okay, so these characters are more than just individuals.
Mm-hmm.
They're like symbols
yes.
of different worldviews.
Different ideologies.
And Priestley is using them to kind of explore those bigger ideas.
Exactly. He's creating a microcosm of society
right.
on stage.
And forcing us to confront those uncomfortable truths.
About ourselves.
About the world we live in. Okay, so we've talked about social responsibility, the characters as symbols, the inspector's mysterious nature. But there's still one big question that's bugging me.
What's that?
Was the inspector real?
Ah, yes, the million-dollar question.
Right. I mean, he seems so supernatural.
He does.
He knows everything. He disappears without a trace.
It's almost like he's a ghost.
Or an angel or something.
Or a figment of their imaginations.
So what do you think, what's Priestley trying to say with this character?
Well, I think that's something we should definitely unpack when we come back after a quick break.
Well, you know that ending with that phone call about a real inspector coming?
Right. It's like, wait, what?
It makes you question everything you just saw.
Yeah. Did any of it even happen?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Was the inspector real, or was he some kind of figment of their imagination?
Or like a collective hallucination or something.
Right. It's like Priestley is saying, I'm not going to give you easy answers.
So if he wasn't a real inspector, then what was he? Well, I think we have to go back to that idea of the characters as constructs.
Okay.
Remember we talked about how Mr. Burling represents capitalism and Mrs. Burling represents social hierarchy.
Right. So are you saying the inspector is a construct too?
I think so.
Okay. But a construct of what?
I think he represents something much bigger than just one individual.
Like what?
Think about it. Priestley wrote this play in 1945.
Right. Just after the Second World War.
Exactly. A time when the world was grappling with the horrors of war.
Yeah, that sense of, like, how could we let this happen?
Exactly. And I think the inspector embodies that collective guilt.
Okay.
That sense of responsibility for the suffering of others.
So he's not just a character. He's like a symbol of conscience.
Exactly. He's that voice inside all of us that tells us to do better to be better.
Yeah, and that's why he's so unsettling,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Because he forces us to confront those uncomfortable truths.
About ourselves.
About our own complicity in the systems that create suffering.
Yeah, and that phone call at the end.
Right.
It's like, it doesn't matter if the inspector was real or not.
No, because his message has already taken root.
It's like he planted a seed of doubt.
And that seed is going to grow.
Even if the Burlings try to ignore it.
Exactly. The audience can't escape it.
It's like Priestley is saying this isn't just a story.
It's a warning.
Yeah, a call to action.
A reminder that we're all responsible for each other.
Wow, that's powerful stuff.
So
I guess the next time I see or read an inspector calls, I'm going to be thinking about it in a whole new way.
I think that's the beauty of this play.
Yeah.
It stays with you. It makes you question. It makes you think.
And hopefully it makes us want to make a difference in the world.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's a great place to wrap up our deep dive into an inspector calls. Thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
And remember, keep those questions coming, because that's what keeps the conversation going.